Well, thank you, Ethan, for inviting me to join, and thanks to all of you for sharing your papers with all of us. So I'm going to keep my comments fairly brief so that we have time to all engage with these papers. This panel invites us to hold two different visions in our minds at the same time. One is of a modern Mediterranean world in which the political, cultural, ideological, intellectual, and religious ties that bind peoples from the north, south, east of the Mediterranean together transcend national or imperial boundaries. That it is, in fact, these ties and these relationships that create what we might think of as a Mediterranean. The other vision is one in which Muslims, Jews, and Christians, primarily Catholics, move around and act in a world that is in an imagined Mediterranean France, which is to say a space that intimately connects France and the Maghreb, and most particularly Algeria. And we are, of course, at a conference where most of us define ourselves in one way or another as historians of France, as Jessica pointed out in the beginning of her presentation. Yet I found it interesting that this panel that brings together historians of French Empire and decolonization with one of North Africa and the Mediterranean may help us tease out some of the tensions involving thinking about Mediterranean France and thinking about the Mediterranean, if those are actually the same kinds of projects. So all three of these papers suggest that colonialism, its moments of origin, its struggles to create institutions, or the immediate aftermath of its end, of decolonization, is an important and integral part of defining Mediterranean France in the 19th century, during the interwar years, or in the 1960s and 1970s. Beyond this basic agreement that we must attend to France's colonial presence in the Maghreb and to the distinct juridical regimes to which Jewish and Muslim North Africans were often subject, the desire to maintain or to contest French colonial power, or the expression of distress over its loss and the consequences of its loss, looms much larger in Ethan and Todd's papers than it does in Jessica's. Her paper is an interrogation of the ways that the encounter between European colonialism and older transregional networks made the Mediterranean modern in some senses. So colonialism is still, as she points out, a motor in her analysis, even if France itself looms less large. How then should we consider colonial power, whether French or otherwise, in the construction of this Mediterranean that our panelists invite us to think about here today? And how does Mediterranean France fit into a larger Mediterranean history if our investigation focuses very closely on the relationship between France and Algeria? In other words, what might it mean to think about Mediterranean France if France itself is so much still part of our discussion? Since Julia Clancy Smith, who was originally going to be part of our panel, couldn't be here, I thought I might invoke her presence by quoting briefly from her Mediterraneans, from a discussion of the problem of writing the history of Mediterranean migrations. And she wrote, quote, "The temptation to fall back upon comfortable binaries or taxonomies of religion, civilization, empire, or nation is ever present. Nevertheless, social interactions, however fraught or friendly, involve people who are also neighbors, workers, competitors, illicit lovers, and not just Muslims, Jews, and Christians, or North Africans and Europeans," unquote. Now, of course, all three of these papers resist these temptations and, in fact, grapple with the ways some of their historical actors, like Todd's social Catholics, sought so desperately to reify, to some extent, these binary taxonomies. None of these papers seek to define people exclusively as religious or ethnic subjects, and Jessica and Ethan's papers explore the many ways that Ankala and his scholarly colleagues, or Bachet Tarzi's musicians, were both colleagues and competitors, and of course, so much more than that. Yet again, however, Ethan and Todd's analyses of Muslim and Jewish artists and activists, or social Catholic abolitionists, are framed as investigations into the nature of French Republican colonialism and its aftermath. To some extent, these are French stories about empire and nation. Jessica's exploration of Ankawa's networks is not a French story, but a Mediterranean Jewish one in which France is a relatively minor player for much of her analysis. And the nation itself has a relatively muted importance. So again, I want us to think about these together to consider how we might want to do Mediterranean history as French historians. And so I'd like to now make some brief comments on the individual papers before coming back to conclude and then opening this to you all. And I'll start with Jessica's paper, whose paper focuses on a person whose life spans the pre-colonial to the colonial moment and moves across many different territories. The longer piece that I read says that it's about defining Mediterranean modernity through Jewish eyes, which is a somewhat different focus. And it was interesting to read that version and to hear your talk today. And one of the things that I found very compelling about your paper is the decentering of France from your analysis of the life of Rabbi Abraham Ankawa and your insistence on the theme of Mediterranean to define him, to allow for the messiness of his identities, his many identities, and those of a lot of the people who he worked with, rather than confining them to the narrower definitions that many of us use when talking about Maghrebi Jews. Ankawa, you suggest, was certainly not French, but was Mediterranean and embodied the interactions between the colonial state and what you call older forms of transregional connectivity and authority. Many of your theoretical and methodological arguments are destined perhaps more or equally, I don't know how you would want to define it, for scholars of Jewish history, North African history, and the Mediterranean world. But you also, of course, remind those of us who work on France to move beyond colonial categories and most especially to move beyond colonial archives as a way of getting access to these other kinds of stories. And so I was intrigued by your entangling of the different ties that bind Ankawa to scholars in Italy, in Palestine, Morocco, Algeria, all of these places across the Mediterranean that make him a truly Mediterranean figure, as you show so well. But I'm wondering about the place of modernity in this discussion, how you want to situate that, and why it's important that he is considered to be Mediterranean, but Mediterranean modern, what you want to do with modernity here. The Mediterranean networks of connectivity that predate the colonial period that you describe so vividly continue to exist, and you show the ways that they continue to inspire the work of Ankawa and the ways that they interact with some of the restrictions that French colonial presence implies. And so I'm wondering if those earlier modes continue to exist and continue to very much define his work and those of a lot of the people who he corresponds with in Fez and Italy, so on and so forth. Does this not challenge some of the discussion of the colonial encounter making the Mediterranean modern, or the use of the term modern to define what exactly is going on in the life of someone like Ankawa? You reject a lot of the other binaries that people may use to define somebody like Ankawa, but you seem attached to the pre-modern and modern as distinctions that you want to investigate. And so I'm wondering if you could say a little bit more about that and what that does to your analysis of him, how it's useful for you thinking about the Mediterranean or whatever else you want us to think that it's useful for. Ethan's close readings of the shifts and fortune of Mahyadine Bacheterzi's El Moutribia troupe, who I just have to stop here to say that I first learned about this, at this point, 8 years ago when we were both doing our research in Paris, so it was nice to see him back again here today. So the shifts and fortune of El Moutribia and the tensions at moments between its Muslim and Jewish musicians and their audiences gives us a window into the ways that Jewish and Muslim diasporic politics played a role in situating these two communities in interwar France, Algeria, and the spaces in between these two places. Ethan suggests that the places where the, quote, culture of the southern Mediterranean became more immediately present in the metropole, unquote, were spaces often shared by Jews and Muslims in neighborhoods like Saint-Gervais in the Marais. And as I read your rich descriptions of the cafes and restaurants and concert halls in where North African Jews and Muslims cross paths with each other and with their fellow Parisians, I found myself wondering whether what we're talking about is a mainland France, as you talk about in your title, that had become Mediterranean, or if certain neighborhoods and streets in Paris had become Mediterranean. And certainly many of us, and I would include myself in this category, use Paris as a synecdoche for France. But the everyday encounters that are so convincingly argued in your talk to be integral to the maintenance of fluid identities in the metropole are also extraordinarily local to these particular spaces that you describe. Even if the actors and activists that you focus on themselves move back and forth across the Mediterranean. So given what you argue about the equally important role of differential relationships to the state and to the polity between Jews and Muslims, their kind of political space in the French state or in Algeria, and their own political investments in nationalist movements or other diasporic movements, given that that's so important to defining their roles, how would you define that, how would you link that discussion of their relationships to the state with the very, very particularly Parisian encounters that you describe in the creation of a Mediterranean France that may or may not be be restrained to that kind of Parisian setting of Paris as the capital city, as you talked about earlier in your paper. The space that makes up Todd's paper is Mediterranean in as much as the social Catholics that he analyzes sought to turn their fight against prostitution into an Arab or Muslim problem as a symptom of a general malaise in decolonizing France. Jean Sélès and some of his peers seem to, in fact, be trying to remove France from any kind of Mediterranean world in ways that reproduced many of the racist logics of the French far right. And it was very interesting to see how that those terms get bandied back and forth across the political spectrum. And what intrigued me about these social left Catholics fighting prostitution in order to combat French decay and attempt to give new life to Christianity was the fact that they identified the Arab Muslim male as the culprits for their society's decline at the same moment that certain other Catholics who would identify themselves as social Catholics or left Catholics were holding up Muslims as a model for the reinvigoration of religious life in 1970s France. And here I'm thinking of the ways that some Catholic and lay clerical leaders in Paris, for example, use the figure of the devout Muslim immigrant, whether of North or West African origin, as a reproach to French lapsed Catholics. So groups like Tous Fils d'Abraham, who sought Catholic Muslim dialogue, or members of particular church communities like Notre Dame de la Croix de Ménilmontant, argued that Muslims were men of faith who understood the presence of God and the importance of religion in everyday life, even in secular France. So at a moment where no one else understood the importance of religious practice, Muslims still did. And this is why the Catholic Church opened its doors, sometimes literally, to Muslims who were seeking space for religious observance. So how, if at all, should we reconcile Sélès's stance that Islam banned prostitution, his earlier collaboration with Massignon, and the fact that many other left-leaning Catholics saw Muslims as a potential model or solution to this problem of the absence of God in French life, with his role in the racializing abolitionist discourse on prostitution, if those can be reconciled. Maybe they can't be. And so to conclude these very brief comments, I'd like to return to the general themes that I started with by drawing our attention to recent comments by Emmanuel Saada on the colonial in French studies. She wonders if the colonial turn in French history has been a victim of its own successes, and suggests that there are three ways to go beyond the problem of what she calls the substantialization of the term colonial. The first of these three paths is one that she argues emerges from area studies and focuses on local processes and their intersections with French colonial, with foreign colonial powers. The second looks at empire itself and maps its deployment of power. And the third tries to resolve the choice between the local and the imperial by looking at the specificities of particular places as nodes in wider imperial circuits of power. Saada suggests that this third path is the most difficult and the most rarely attempted because of the need to work with multiple languages and multiple archives across states. Do these categories describe the approaches taken in these two papers? I think they draw on, some, in some cases, more than one of these approaches. And I also think that the distinctions she draws are somewhat clearer cut than they may actually be. But it may be productive for us to think about what work on Mediterranean France might look like if we defined it in those terms, and what it might mean to write about Mediterranean France as a historian of France, a historian of empire, historian of the Maghreb or a historian of Mediterranean Islam, Judaism, or Catholicism. Thanks.